Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. This is show number 19. Andrew, are you there?
19. Do you know that song?
I do not know that song. I'm sorry.
Do you not know? Paul Hardcastle.
Sorry.
No, 19. It was the average age of the Vietnamese soldiers when they died on the battlefield.
No.
And there was a song. You're not familiar with Paul Hardcastle?
Sounds very British.
So our guest this week is Jaina Ueda. Did I say it right?
Yes, you did. Hi.
All right, there you go.
Hey.
Yeah.
He's been asked, Jaina, he's been asking me all week, how do you pronounce her name? I said, oh, I don't know, Jaina. I don't know, Obscura, just call her that.
Right.
Obscura. Right. Madam Obscura.
Yeah, howdy. That sounds great, doesn't it? Hello, welcome. Jaina.
Welcome. We have, it's great to talk to you. I know you and Andrew have met before, so I'm kind of the odd duck out. You guys are like old pals.
We are, yeah. We met briefly over Pinhole Weekend.
Andrew was just sort of going through every single contestant with a rude introduction, so.
Did I do you against the wall as well?
Exactly.
Whoa. There's an element of this worldwide pinhole meetup thing that I just don't know yet. I guess I haven't caught on to this.
I wasn't fussy. Men or women, I did them all against the wall. And I have some nice images to show as well.
To back up the doing of the wall.
Yeah, in fact, I'm staring at the negatives now, and I can see Jaina there. She's in the middle. Some are better than others, I have to say. I think it depends.
Oh my God.
As I was doing them all against the wall, sometimes my hand wasn't that steady.
Right, because you were doing each one of these. You didn't have a tripod. You were just hand-holding every single one of these, and these were a couple of second exposures. It wasn't just a quick...
Well, I was guessing, really. It was quite dark, wasn't it? And
true.
The exposures, when I'm looking at these negatives, I've got 12 faces that I'm looking at.
I've heard those Englishmen are pretty quick, so yeah, I guess.
My wife's probably the blurriest out of all of them.
No.
I must have been quite excited when I was doing that one.
Uh-oh.
Alex Yates looks quite glum. Jaina looks fine. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I haven't really done anything with these yet. They're on my desk, and which normally means you should it's a reminder for me to do something with them. So I don't know whether I might make little prints and do a little series of them, but I haven't got around to it yet.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then,
Jaina.
Go on. I'll stop talking.
No. Yeah, I was going to say, come on, Andrew. We're going to have a show that's just going to be Andrew talking. Today's guest is Andrew.
I could send in voice messages to myself with asking myself questions,
and you could just answer them.
Exactly, you could do a live Q&A what people are asking you.
Yeah. You want to do that, Andrew? Does that sound good?
A spin-off show.
Yeah, exactly. So you are out in Seattle, right?
Correct. Jaina? Uh-huh. Yep.
And you get to hang out with lots of cool people. Todd?
Yes.
Zeb? Well, no, he's in Portland, right?
He's in Portland, but it's close enough. I actually just saw him last week. So,
wow.
That's kind of the cool thing, I think, about this area. And a lot of that comes out of the passion that Blue Moon and Zeb have for pinhole and lensless, right?
Sure.
So it builds a community, and I get to be a part of it. So it's pretty cool.
I was going to say, having all those influences around you, I'm sure has influenced your pinhole, but had you discovered any of those guys and that's what got you into pinhole, or have you been doing pinhole for, you know, before you started hanging out with all those guys and met up with them?
Yeah. So I guess the reason I started shooting pinhole photography is actually going back a bit to a friend who doesn't shoot quite as much right now, but he's got a lot of family at this point, and that's Jeff Soderquist. He was a friend of mine, and we both started picking up photography around the same time. And we went through it. I think what a lot of people do, which is where you decide to take it seriously. So you move from your cell phone to a digital like SLR. Mm-hmm. And then from the digital SLR, you decide to take a leap and go into film. So Jeff and I sort of followed the same sort of path together. And Jeff was doing a Holga shot a day while I was fiddling around with a Diana. And then he picked up a zero image. And I think we both looked at zero image pinhole cameras because A, so much of it was coming out of the Pacific Northwest from Blue Moon Camera. Because each of those guys is armed with at least one pinhole camera. And Zeb's probably like the most amazing evangelist of lensless photography. Because, you know, you're always trying to look for ways to make something, you know, usual, something ordinary, something everyday, but making it so much more extraordinary. And I think Zeb does that. And I'd say, I guess, the other person that really influenced me is probably, again, back to the old days of Flickr, way back then. But it's a guy named Ross Togashi. Mm-hmm. Yep. RT Photos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've mentioned him on the show before, and I've actually reached out to him to come on. But yeah, I think he's been a little unwell. I don't know. He seemed a bit hesitant. So yeah. I've let it lie. But he really influenced me as well. Those color. I mean, he was the images he puts on his Honolulu, isn't he?
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff on the. Mm-hmm. And some of them are quite surreal, and
amazing.
I really want to get him on the show.
Yeah,
Zeb is coming on because we've already asked him and he's agreed.
Of course.
But Ross.
Ross has. I've been in touch with him regularly through the years. I did have the opportunity to go on a stroll with him. I think about 8 years ago now. At this point, he's an absolutely wonderful person, but. He has had a little bit of some health problems come up. So, hopefully, you know, at least maybe he can participate by, like, sending a message and you can read a letter out loud to him. But I sent him a group photo of us from Pinhole Day because, you know, every year around Pinhole Day, I always like to send him a group photo and just say, hey, we're all here together. Wanted to send you a photo and, you know, wish you a good Pinhole Day. So, yeah.
Oh, that's really sweet. Yeah, I think when before they messed around with Flickr and it was a very active place. That's what he was very prolific, he was one of my first contacts, you know, and people who I'd interact with regularly or constantly looking at his images.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
So you of course you grew up with film like most of us did, but you didn't. When you really started getting into photography, you started off doing digital and then went into film.
Yeah.
Is that serious about it, you know, anyways. Cool. I know me and Andrew have a little bit more of a film background and then digital came in, but
the whole digital thing passed me by, really. It's just a passing fad, isn't it? Really?
Yeah. Sure.
No.
Did you have any influences in your family, Jane? Father, mother, brother?
Yeah. Well, I took photography in high school, and then what got me shooting film again was one of my aunts sent me a Nikon FG. So she had just gotten it sort of CLA'd. She just gotten it cleaned up,
right?
And she wanted to send it on over to me because at the time I was also kind of playing a little bit and taking some classes on digital video making. So there's a place out here that you can, of course, Seattle, again, being sort of this hub of creativity. There's places where you can go and learn how to do some video editing. So I was playing around with a lot of these video cameras. And I think she thought, hey, I'm going to send her this really cool old camera that she used to shoot. So she sent that on over to me. And that's what got me shooting film. So I went downstairs to a drugstore, picked up a roll of Kodak. I don't know what it was. Probably like P3200, something like that, something crazy. Because I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And I just picked up some roll of film and loaded it up. And I think I blew the entire roll because I didn't understand exposure quite well.
Yeah. Well, we lost. Andrew's decided he didn't want to talk with us anymore. So we'll just keep talking. Let's take a break real fast.
All right, no problem.
right, there's Andrew.
Hello, mate.
Why did you not want to talk to us?
Well, I don't know. It's just atmospherics, probably.
Atmospherics. And there's Jaina's back. Yeah.
Hello, Jaina.
Hello. Yeah.
I sit really still. I don't move the phone or anything.
Yeah. It's that white shirt, I think. So how did you? I know that I've seen a lot of pictures of you in Hawaii. So you have family in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
How does that tie in with, you know, with your photography? Because you're Japanese, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I grew up in Hawaii. That's why you usually see me going back home.
Gotcha.
Because I go home usually during Christmas time. That's, you know, vacation time. So I take the opportunity in the mornings before the whole house wakes up, since I'm on, you know, West Coast time. And it's a 3-hour difference. I usually wake up before the rest of the house. So sure. I take that as an opportunity to like just head out to the water someplace and just relax and watch the sunrise and shoot a couple of pinholes. But that's also why, again, going back to Ross and Artie Photos, I usually do image searches before I go any place. And so I was looking up images of Honolulu, and his stood out so dramatically from everything else that I needed to know more. But yeah, cool. That's why you see me in Hawaii a lot.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great.
Were your parents military? Is that why they were based there, or how did they happen to
My dad's military, so he did serve some time, but the whole family, basically, it's immigrated over to America and landed in Hawaii, and have since been sort of you know, living and making a whole life in Hawaii. Yeah,
sure. I lived in Hawaii when I was younger too.
Oh wow, you lived everywhere, Corey.
Just about, yeah. We lived in Waianae.
Oh, okay, sure.
Over on the west side, the tough side.
The worst side.
The worst, yeah, the worst possible place to have to go to public school, you know what I mean? Like,
now, we call public school over here is like the posh school where you go if you've got loads of money.
Oh, wow.
But it's not like that in America, is it? It's the other way around. So public, if you're a public school boy in England, you go to Eton or somewhere like that, you know, and dress up in strange costumes, and your parents have to pay maybe £12,000, you know, a term or something, I don't know, but loads of money anyway. And you go there, and you can be a boarder, you know, so you stay there and sleep there and get abused by the teachers.
Is that where you wear the shorts and the knee-high socks?
Yeah, that's it. I think so.
You have to find us a picture of you there.
No, I never went.
Knee-high socks.
No, I came from a solid working class background, mate, I tell you.
Yeah, and, me too.
But yeah, public school is in the UK is for posh boys.
Oh, wow.
So, right. So how much are we... If anybody's following Jaina on Instagram, you know that she is into Instax and the instant film. How have you, has that ever come into your pinhole photography, or have you tried and then didn't work, or peel apart is about the only thing that really worked good, and we all know what happened to that. So,
So I think the first pinhole Instax that I tried was having the Diana F with the mini Instax back.
Now I have a Diana F that's been sitting in my cupboard since I bought it, and I often look at those backs, and one or two people seem to get good results, but I've never really fancied shelling out the 80 quid or whatever it is for it.
Yeah.
You've used one. Have you got good results?
I did. I got some good results. I wasn't quite sure what I was doing, because that was my first exposure into pinhole camera. Because at that time, because we're looking at 6 years ago, at that time I still hadn't invested fully in a dedicated pinhole camera. So I thought I'd try it out by just using a camera I had, and I bought the Diana Instax back so I could use it. So I learned a couple of about exposure times, and since Instax film is fairly inexpensive, especially the mini, I was able to take two or three shots to get the exposure right and start to understand more about reciprocity and all that. Sure. But I also had for a little while, and I gave this away at the San Francisco Pinhole Day meetup, but I had a super sense. And actually, this purchase was again influenced by the horrible Mr.
Oh, he
Alex
has one of those. Every time I meet up with him, he takes it out and he shoots with it. And I've never seen anything worth looking at that he's produced with it. Yeah, he produces an absolute pile of crap, I have to say, with it. So I don't know whether that's him or the camera.
No, I seem to think it's possibly user
error.
Yeah,
I think so.
On that side. But the issue with the Super Sense, it's very interesting because it did give you kind of a bellows effect. And the body style of it is based off of the Impossible Instant Lab. So it has a base. It's got this bellows that sticks out. And that's where the pinhole is.
Well,
and you're able to make
Jaina, you'll remember, because I was an Impossible pioneer, and they were talking merrily about their first camera. This was way before the plastic thing that came out, you know, the two cameras that they have out now. Their original concept was to have the base, which carried the film and the battery, I guess, and then you would have the option. So they brought the film lab out, and that was meant to be the first stage. The next stage was you could then take the cone off the film lab and put the camera on top. So that was there. So you'd swap different bodies, I guess, onto the sort of film carrier bit at the bottom. And so it was this sort of modular system that they were, if you ever messaged Impossible in the early days, that was, and they had a page on it on their website saying, this is the camera we're designing. Mm-hmm. And the Instant Lab came out and they were going to take the same base and make a pinhole camera.
Right.
But then Super Sense, of course, obviously somehow got that and took it away because it was the same, was it Florian or whichever one it was set up over there. Super Sense is that in Vienna? It is in Vienna, isn't it? And they launched that Super Sense pinhole camera, which was a sort of was basically what the Impossible Project were going to bring out.
Right. It was an interesting concept. It was a little expensive for what it did, especially considering the cost of film and the temperament of the film at the time that camera came out. So the temperament of the film combined with pinhole photography led to some real crap shots.
Well, Alex is, even though the film has got a lot more reliable now, he still can't seem to make it work. He doesn't listen to this show, so we can abuse him.
All right. So what is the reciprocity of Instax, Jaina?
Oh gosh, I can't even
Oh, I thought
you.
We were going to have a break a breaking news moment. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to get Todd Schlemmer to identify what the specific curve of Instax film is. Because he was also, again, with his knowledge of, you know, all his 3D printing, I know at one point a few years ago, I saw that he was trying to mock up some kind of an Instax mini pinhole. So I think he was using the Diana Instax back, and he was looking at a couple of other options on how we could sort of combine the two. I'm not sure where that landed, but I didn't actually see it out in the wild, so I don't know if it actually was
successful. We can ask him about that, because we're hopefully going to get him back on again soon. And so we can ask.
Yeah, the next couple of shows, he's going to come back on and talk about slide film, pinholing with slide film. He's busted the myth.
He was going through, and he was trying to make a spam can camera for me, but there were some issues with just the way the can is built. It's very soft. There are all these issues and how to sort of design it. But I saw that when I was at his lab the other day too. It was kind of cool to see.
Yeah,
it
cool.
Again.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you on a daily basis? What are you dragging around and shooting most of your pinhole with? I know that you have that beautiful Fuji GF670. We're not going to talk about that.
What are your favorite pinholes? I've seen it. It's lovely.
Oh, you're killing me.
Yeah. And you had that. Sorry, but you had that. You had the mint. Did you have the mint camera on loan as well? The RF.
Yes. So I was in Hong Kong maybe a little over a month ago, and I did get to meet with Gary Ho. I did get to actually test out. I walked over there just to see if they had one on display. One of the Instax RF70s, the rangefinder folding Instax wide camera. And I went there just to see if they had one for me to just play around with. And Gary ended up loaning me a prototype that I could use to sort of take images for the 3 days I had left in Hong Kong. So I put a lot of effort into that. And the similarity between that and the GF670, the form, the lens, the bellows, all of that was really sort of odd. It felt like I was shooting the same camera.
Cost about the same amount, I expect, when it comes out.
Yeah.
But I don't think so, because that GF670 right now is mega bucks.
Yeah. Well, I would say the RF70 is about half the price of what I paid for my RF670. Yeah. Or GF670.
Anyway, we're not interested in cameras with lenses. Yeah.
We want to hear about your pinhole cameras.
Yeah. So I tend to sort of have my favorites, and I stick to one camera that I carry around with me at all times. Right now, it's Todd's Terrapin 2020. Yep, and Andrew, this is the one that I got at the pinhole swap, the one that we did at the fish and chips place in Norwich.
Yep.
It's a great little camera. It's been fun to just see Todd's camera evolution, because I was one of the original people that helped to work with him on the P66, which I think was one of his original designs, when he conceptualized, I'm going to send out the packet and have people build it themselves. And I think it's due to my clumsy attempts at building the camera myself that he decided it's best not to rely on human effort.
He talked about those when he came on. He was talking about the evolution of his cameras, and I remember him talking about that and talking about you too.
So I failed at it, and I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah, because I'm not used to sitting around with files and adhesives and all this kind of a thing. I'm kind of terrible, right? I'm not one of these people who wants to try and invent a camera. I like to have a dedicated camera for a dedicated purpose, but I rely on someone else to engineer it. And I
yeah, that's
like
how I
it.
Am. Yeah.
So. Well, you dabble in making, don't you? You see, and I have
who me?
You've made a 5x4, haven't you?
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, like, this is what I was talking to Todd the other day, actually, and we were talking about this, and I told him that I was like, I can make cameras out of, you know, little out of tins or boxes or whatever, you know, single shot deal, sure. But after that, I've tried to make a few, but I've kind of gotten to the point now, I feel kind of like how Jana feels is I have a camera that I want to do one thing with, and anything that involves tolerances and shaping things and trying to get predictable, you know, repeatable results. There's so many people making cameras that I'm just going to support them and buy what they have, you know, as opposed to trying to make it myself. Yep.
Me too, but I am going to make a Matchbox pinhole camera over the summer. That's on my list of things to do.
Don't buy that Kickerland paper camera that I bought that looks like the P. Chiron.
I'm just going to have a Matchbox. I was talking to, when I was in London the other week with Joe Baker, Evil Chutney. He was
Joe,
he came along to the, so I met him in London, Jana, the other week, and he was shooting with his Holger pinhole wide camera, and
in front of you,
goading me.
I would have been like, "Hey, does this look level?"
In fact, I could have easily, because he's.
Can you advance
this
frame for me? My fingers hurt. I can't do it.
He's a bit of a wiry chap. I could have easily done him in and left his body somewhere.
A nice shiny nuke. Hey, I was watching eBay, and I found one. But I lost it. I didn't get it. I thought $100 was too much. I think it ended up going for like $90. I was like, nah, I think I'm not paying that much for it. Or Andrew's not going to pay for it.
No, I'm kind of, yes, I'm not really that bothered. Todd's going to make me one anyway.
I was going to say, Todd's going to start spitting them out here pretty soon. I think as soon as he
So, Andrew, is it specifically because you want a 6x12 or a 6x16?
No, I have a I have a 6x12 reality so subtle, which I think I've seen some. The whole thing's got a bit out of hand, to be truthful. And there's I'm only talking to you two now, so no one else is listening. I'm not really that bothered, but I kind of play along with it now because it's good fun, you know. And Alex Purcell at Grainy Blur, he when I met up with him a few months ago, he was shooting with one, and I saw his results, and I thought, wow, that's got some really lovely results, different from my reality, because the reality is kind of perfect, you know, because it's got that lovely curved plane and beautifully made. Yeah. And, well, that whereas the Holger had all the. It was just a pile of crap, really.
It does 6x9. I really like 6x9. The little contact prints are just right, I think, 6x9.
Well, I think probably 6x9. I've got another 6x6 coming from Todd, the Oscar, Terrapin Oscar. He's making one of those for me. So that then I'll have 3 6x6 cameras.
Yeah.
And the 6x12. Well, yeah. The 6x9 format, I love. I shoot 6x9. Medium format anyway, yeah. with a Fuji.
I think I like 6x6 the most. If I had just one style, I would take 6x6. But I do like a little bit wider once in a while, so I like that. I like the 6x9. Just kind of break it up some.
So yeah. I don't know. I'll buy one. I don't know whether either Todd's or when James brings his one out, because I really love my reality so subtle.
Right.
6x6F.
Well, and James, I think, just came out with a 6x9.
Yeah,
as
he
well.
Did. Yeah,
is
yeah,
it,
yeah. He could.
Is
just,
he actually? So... Is it actually a live thing now?
Yeah, I think
he was talking about.
Yeah, you
it,
can order them. I think they're shipping.
Oh dear!
Yep,
don't tell
yep,
me that.
Yep, yep. So he had it on his website, and it looks beautiful. I've been debating on that one too. The other one I really enjoyed looking at, and I believe it's at, yeah, it was at Blue Moon. So Zeb at Blue Moon actually pulled this out so I could take a look at it. And it's Parrot Cam, Kurt Rottweiler. He's got that new woodblock camera of his.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all tooled out of a single piece of
Alex
wood.
Has
and just the
yeah. Alex has one.
Yeah,
Alex has one.
Of course.
It's 6x6, though, isn't it?
No.
Yes.
Well, I thought Alex, well, I'm sure that probably I'm getting muddled up because Alex was shooting with his curved back wooden camera when I saw him.
Oh, sure. So that's one of the earlier designs from Kurt.
I think it was one of Kurt's cameras.
Yeah. So I think it's the P6.
That's
or something
it.
Like
yes.
That, it's
yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful curved. Beautiful. Like brass pieces on it. Yeah. Yep. So that's definitely out of his. But the woodblock is, I think, his attempt at making maybe a more a budget-friendly pinhole camera.
Yeah, I always get, when I go on somebody's website and I see lovely-looking cameras and there's no price next to it, you know it's not going to be cheap.
It's his email for more details. My debit card starts shaking in my wallet. I'm like, what's going on? It's like vibrating.
Yep. But I will say, back to the whole 6x12, I had an Ondu 6x12 for a little while. Mm-hmm. And that was one of those, you know, you can decide if you want it 6'9", 6'12", what had you. And for me, 6'12" is a little too wide. It depends a lot too, right, on the angle of view from the camera and however that's engineered. But a 6x12 for me was a little too wide. A 6x6 is a lot of fun, but can sometimes also be a little too tight. So I think like a 6x9 is
middle.
Just right.
Yeah.
I've been watching. There's been a few lovely images posted recently. I think Monica, Dr. Mars Rover, and Lorraine Healy have been using, I think both been using one of Todd's earlier 6x9s. He's changed the design, I think, of his, as he evolves the 6x9. I think the new ones maybe have a slightly wider angle of view, maybe, I think.
Yeah. So Todd, and I'm sure he probably mentioned this, but not only is he the maker of things and the solver of problems, he's also the organizer of events. Uh-huh. So here locally in Seattle, again, just, you know, the amazing nature of the community here, he organizes monthly meetups.
Yep.
So I've been able to meet Monica, Lorraine, and we sort of travel around and find interesting, you know, dungy alleys.
Places to go, huh?
Exactly. And suddenly you see like a bunch of, you know, 10 people with tripods and funny looking boxes in an area. And it naturally draws questions.
You need to move. Corey, you're obviously in a creative backwater where you live. You should move over to Seattle.
As soon as I tell you what, man, as soon as my wife is finished and she gets certified, we'll be able to go just about anywhere we want to. So we'll see what happens, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if you're ever in the area, just hit me up or Todd or anyone. We're always happy to just host pinhole folk that come into the area.
Yeah, Todd said if I come over, he'll make a special meetup for me.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to the World Pinhole Day, aren't you, anyway, next year?
That's in Boston, though, so yeah.
I know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so big shout out for that for people who listen to your podcast. We've got Carla and Evan over in Boston, who are now coordinating and getting everything set up for Pinhole Day 2019 in Boston, Massachusetts. Yeah. So I've already talked to Corey about it. I know we've got a lot of people who are signing up. And the thing about this is it's also an opportunity for a lot of the film people that we know from social media, whether they're pinhole or not. Because honestly, Carla came out to meet with us at the Pinhole Day in Portland. That was a few years ago, and she wasn't really a pinhole photographer, but by landing, you know, with our group on Pinhole Day and just being handed a massive amount of pinhole cameras, she's kind of become a pinhole photographer. And then her boyfriend, Evan, made a fantastic pinhole camera himself.
Yeah, I posted a picture of that, Corey, because I think you commented on it.
On the camera?
Anyway, but I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That camera is the prettiest girl in the room. You can't go anywhere with that camera without someone needing to point it out, ask a question, walk over,
right.
Buy it.
I'm staring at a picture of Evan now. So his pinhole portrait came out pretty sharp, actually. Yeah.
Well, you know, that seems to be in general, because when I used to be using my digital camera to take, you know, landscape pictures or whatever, nobody ever said anything to me about it. As soon as I put that thing up and I take out my Reality 6x6 or something and put it on my tripod, there's like five people standing there asking me, what is that? You know, it's like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what? I was, Tuesday this week, Julie and I went on the Snowdon Mountain Railway. So there's a tiny little.
I love the Snowdon Mountain Railway. That's amazing.
Yeah. So it takes an hour to chug all the way to the top. And I took my backpack with me with my field camera and 6x17 back on it. And I got out of the train, and you have 30 minutes before the train goes back down again. So
you're rushing? Quickly,
yeah, I was a bit. Yeah, I ran around, and the sun was high enough in the sky to be illuminating some mountains. I'm looking down, because this is like just over 1,000 meters or so. And so you're looking down at these other peaks around Snowdon, and the wind is howling, and I'm cold because I haven't got the right clothing. And I grab two shots, I load a new film in, and I'm starting to panic now because I know the time is running out. So I'm going around to the other side with this Toyo field camera with a 6x17 back on. And somebody says to me, is that a Hasselblad? And
sure.
I said, no, it really isn't. But, you know, I didn't really have a lot of time to engage him in conversation because I had about 10 minutes before the train went. But normally those sort of they're openings, aren't there, for those sort of things are openings to discuss film photography with folks.
So if you'd have just sat for an hour, you could have waited for the train to come back and then rode back down again, right?
No, they're full up. All those trains are full up. I'd have had to walk down. You can walk down, but I didn't really fancy that, carrying all that gear.
Yeah.
And
no,
that's
quite a lot.
And you pay £30 for the trip to go up and back again.
Oh, so my God, that's like $200, isn't it?
No,
I'm just picking.
£30 for an hour long.
It's my job.
Well, it's an hour up and an hour back down again. I'm ignoring you.
I know.
But it's each train, they run every half an hour, and they're full up. There's not a seat to spare. So, yeah.
Crazy. Goodness. Well, you have brought, done some pinhole shots on the train going up and down, you know?
Oh, that could
be
fun.
No, I didn't. I'd been.
Oh, you don't have a pinhole camera. You've loaned them all out.
I do.
That's right.
No, I had my Zero with me, and I shot a couple of rolls of Velvia 50, and I finished that off yesterday around the supermarket.
Cool. Oh.
So you're shooting slide film in your pinhole as well?
Yeah, but I haven't seen the results yet, so don't get too excited.
Okay.
I shoot slide film in mine, but I cross process it. I don't have C41 chemicals here. I just shoot it and then just have fun, just cross process it.
I'm going to build up 10 rolls, and then I'm going to just buy an E6 kit and do it myself.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I haven't been brave enough to attempt to use slide film in a pinhole. Actually, I had to stop using color film at all. So E6, C41, I had to stop using it because I was having so much trouble reading the film counter through the window of my Ondu pinhole.
Kodak had a problem with their numbers. Exactly. Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
And you know what catches me out as well? So I put Portra in my reality 6x12, and you can't read anything through that, so that's really hard. And then you combine the really dim window in James's camera with the Kodak film, you can't see a thing.
I don't think it's the fact that the window is dim. I think it's that how that style is set up is you're essentially looking through a little tunnel, so there's no light hitting it at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, you have to angle it sunlight is burning down through the hole.
But you're back. Color now. What happened? What changed it, Jana? Yeah.
For me, honestly, it was Todd's 2020, his Terrapin 2020. He told me he had tested it to make sure that Kodak film paper could be read through his window. So he uses a slightly, I think, less red sort of a piece, whatever that plastic piece he puts in the back of his camera. And lo and behold, I loaded up my first roll of Portra, and I shoot C41 again in my camera. And I was like, oh my gosh, thank you. I've been hoarding up all of this Neopan.
Yeah.
Neopan being like the favorite for
me also. I'm a hoarder too. We're in it together.
I have an entire drawer. In fact, while Carla and Evan were visiting me, they were laughing because I've got an entire vegetable drawer just dedicated to all of the different formats of Neopan that I can possibly stash into a single drawer. On the door handle where you typically have, you know, your ketchup bottles or you know, your brown sauce, what have you. Instead of that, I've just got like rows of like FP100C and weird impossible, you know, poor packs and bizarre things like that. And another drawer is just dedicated to 120 and all of its, you know, oddness. And then another drawer is for 35.
So you don't have children then, I take it.
I don't really, I need to figure out a better way to organize. Maybe I need like a smaller fridge somewhere that I can store all my film. Yeah, I know.
I was doing that with the Acros and putting it in the freezer. My wife one day, she was like, stop. That's it. She can't do this anymore. You got to stop. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. Luckily.
Yeah. I'm going to start just mixing cocktails with a couple of rows of Acros at this point.
Luckily they hit the, you know, the discontinued or whatever. So she was like, shoo, we don't have any more space for this. You can't buy any more of it and put it in here anymore.
Yeah. Although I did see there's a Japanese guy, and I can't always read it, but I did see somebody who posted that maybe Fuji Black and White will be coming back. Maybe not necessarily in Neopan Acros. I haven't really investigated. I just saw it this morning.
Well, if it's anything to do with Fuji Film Corporation, I wouldn't believe anything.
Folks? Breaking news. Jana just said that Fuji is bringing back black and white film.
No, they won't. There's no money in it for them, and they're not interested in film. I'm sure they're not.
Right,
and I think,
right.
I think, I'm not even sure it's worth investing too much in Instax, really, because I'm not. Once a 10-year-old girl stops shooting it, and
you know,
the market drops out at the bottom, drops out of that market, I think Fuji will just. scrap it like they've done everything else. So
what do you comparing Jana to a 10-year-old girl? Come on, Andrew. Have a little bit of respect for our guests. Jeez.
Well, the majority.
I will say, I'm much more of an Instax shooter. I'm not an Instax. I'm a much more of a Polaroid shooter.
And the majority. But we're not the market. Not the market. 10-year-old Japanese girls are.
They're buying it up.
They're all about it, huh?
Fuji have a track record When the market bottoms out for them, they just pull out.
But it's been clicking along pretty good for a while now, though, hasn't it? I mean, it has.
And that actually brings to mind, I had another camera. This was homemade. This was by Herschel, Square Peg Pinhole, back in the day. Again, from our pinhole day in Portland. But Herschel, sorry, I'm just fighting a spider that decides to crawl into my home here. Herschel actually handmade a pinhole camera that took film. And it's this beautiful box, and it's entirely homemade, including the pinhole. But it made some beautiful, beautiful images. And that's probably the most successful pinhole instant that I've had. If only I had more of the box of film to shoot with it.
That's funny.
But it's great. Yeah, it was a great camera. It's an odd little box. It's got like a press board on the sides, but it's a
beautiful camera. So you've mentioned a few names now, and all of them, I think, were co-hosts on your pinhole podcast. Am I right?
Yeah,
pretty much, weren't they? Jay Sod.
Yes. Jeff Soderquist, who's recently reared his head again. I've seen him twice in the last year, after not seeing him for a couple of years. But he's back on Instagram, which is great because he has a very definite style and a definite look to his images. And it's one of the reasons why he was somebody who really sort of influenced me to pick up. In fact, he went with me to Oregon when we went to Blue Moon Camera on a road trip together. Hank, Espresso Buzz, Colby, I think. We just took a road trip down to Portland to the Mecca of Blue Moon Camera. And Jeff helped me buy my first pinhole camera, which was a zero image 6x9.
That's Jeff Soderquist? Soderquist?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So cool. I think on the pod, because I listened to your podcast when you were firing them out, and there was a few of you, wasn't there? Because Alex, I remember meeting Alex for the first time maybe 3 years ago. And I'd not met him before, but I knew I'd got the, when I'm this strange man in the lay-by came up to me and he opened his mouth. He's got this very distinctive voice. I thought, oh yeah, you sound just like you do on the podcast. And Shelley, most of those guys, are they all instant photographers as well? I know Shelley is, isn't she?
I would say, I mean, I became an instant photographer just due to community around me. And I mean, here's what's really cool, and I think why we do Pinhole Day, where we all just want to group up together, is social media helps us all connect. Yep. I mean, that first podcast that we had, I mean, we were in, you know, Denver, Norwich, Seattle, right? And Herschel was over in Nashville. There was no way that we would have ever met each other in person, but we knew each other through social media and wanted to do something together. And I think that's kind of, you know, community isn't just what's in front of you, it's the people that you connect with on
I mean, virtually. look at what we're doing right now. I mean, there's no way we would have ever run into each other, and you know, I mean,
exactly,
that was, and I remember listening to that, to you guys' pinhole show, and then I was like, oh, this is really cool, and then I listened to all of them, and then it just stopped, you know. And then I went on, then the Sunny 16 guys had me on. And that was right when I did the show with them, I was like, I really want to do this. And it just kind of sat in the back of my mind for a couple of years, actually. And then I heard Mike Gutterman on, you know, and he's like, this is easy with the Anchor app. And I checked it out, and then I just woke up one day and said, okay, you know, I'm going to do it. So
I'm going to do it. Yeah. No. And you guys have been keeping this up on a regular weekly basis, which is incredible. Cause that's a lot to do, but the Facebook group has also been amazing. Cause there's a couple of different Facebook groups, but the Lenses Podcast Facebook group, there's just all this communication. So that's been a really fun group to watch and see and
it's
share.
It's growing slowly.
So
I think we're up to, I think it's about 177 or something.
170 people of the most peculiar nature, right?
Yeah. Not your average weirdos, pinhole weirdos. No.
Exactly.
But you know, that's what I was telling Todd too the other day. I was saying, hey, you know, I mean, we all kind of think the same, and if somebody has a problem, we help them. You know, nobody has any special secret sauce. We're all using the same film. I know we're all using either one of three pinhole cameras. You know what I mean? It's like, there's no, you know, why can't we all just have fun and just, you know, get along and just really have and enjoy this and make the most of it? You know,
yeah.
What Jaina, we do have a Flickr group as well.
We do?
Has about 55 members on there now. And actually, there's a few little discussions going now, because you can access discussions once again through your phone. But it's not... I went on. I don't go on as much.
I don't either. I'm really bad about it. I need to get over there and do it.
But I was on there just a little while ago before we started recording, and a couple of new folks were asking questions about 5x7 plate photography and pinhole cameras. And so I was trying to answer them as best I could, but I really said maybe the best if you... This, you know, the Flickr's not as active as it used to be. And although you guys...
No.
You know, it's nice to... have you guys here and get the discussions going. But if you want a fuller answer, then probably drop into the Lensless Podcast Facebook group.
Yeah.
And there's a few more people on there. It's a little bit more interactive than Flickr.
I'm so bad, but the only thing I don't like about Flickr is that the app that you have for your phone isn't that great. So I really enjoy it better when I can sit down at my computer, and like the time whenever for me to sit down and like actually turn my computer on and like put some time into this kind of so thin, so it's.
There's a few hundred pictures on there now. Photographs that people drop on there, you know. Mark, Three-Eyed Monster's a regular poster. Mm-hmm. Todd is.
Todd
James.
Everywhere.
Yeah. James put. Yeah. I think James has put some pictures up there too.
He has.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
cool.
And
yeah.
You know, if you've got a big screen in front of you, it's a great way to view other people's pinhole photography.
There is also the Pinhole Reddit.
I don't know what that is.
So there is a subreddit. Yeah, there is a subreddit for pinhole photography specifically.
I don't even know what you're talking about. What language is that?
I was going to say, we're not hip with you new kids' lingo. You got to fill us in, Jane.
So Reddit's another sort of like a posting board. It definitely doesn't have like the slick interface.
Oh, I've heard of it. I do know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yep. So there are different subreddits, and there is actually one for pinhole photography. It's all one word, so you know, backslash pinhole photography, all one word, and people do share there. There's not as much interaction there as well. I think a lot of people just put it there to sort of get it distributed and things like that. But yeah, there is. I mean, there's community pockets everywhere. I kind of miss Flickr because Flickr was such a large part of what I was doing when I first got started. It's how I met Alex Yates. In fact, I found the other day when I was cleaning up, I have a pile of film that just looks awful in my back room. But I was cleaning it all out, and I actually found the first pinhole swap that Alex and I did for about 4 years ago, something like that. But Flickr was a large part of how we connected. And Flickr was a large part of how Larissa, you know, connected to the pinhole photography for her Obscura book. Flickr was so huge.
It was.
And it died, and that's too bad.
I was really into it, particularly as I was getting into instant photography, funnily enough, just as Polaroid closed the door. But that's how I first started interacting with people and going on Polaroid meetups in London was through Flickr. And then a year later or so, I got into Twitter, and then that suddenly made sense to me, you know, because if you... just sort of hook into the community that you're interested in, don't you? Twitter.
Yeah.
And it's been a revelation, really, meeting folk all around the world. Every time we've been to the States, we've hooked up with people. I'd never met them before, but, you know, you just sort of send them a tweet and said, do you want to meet up? And I could be anybody, couldn't I? I normally say me and my wife there, so they don't think I'm some kind of weirdo. You know? and we've just...
Well, they do.
Yeah.
I was going to say, don't worry. Don't use your wife for this. Don't use... You're still a weirdo, Andy.
We've had some wonderful experiences, and it's all through the revelation of the community and social media and how everyone links up together.
Yeah. Cool.
Yep.
Jaina, anamorphs. Anamorph.
Oh, yes.
Explain.
Yes.
Sorry to lurch from that to this. But I'm staring at, when I was looking at your website earlier and your projects, anamorphs, I did some Googling, and it was, and there's a whole world of folks tweeting about fancy anamorphic lenses and cinematic techniques and squeezing images into things they shouldn't be squeezed into and distortion and focus.
I know that Moment came out with its own anamorphic video lens for their Moment sort of mobile photography.
That's it. I saw that as I was Googling around.
Yep. Yep. So they came out with that. I'm going to sort of defer to Todd Schlemmer, maybe to sort of go through the the physics of how an anamorphic camera works. But to my understanding, basically you have film, and I did this with a couple of soda cans. That was my first experiment with anamorphic pinhole. Was I got a couple of soda cans, and I cut a roll of 120 film so that it just lined the inside of the can, and I taped it in, and then you have a pinhole that comes from the top of the can.
I see.
So where most cameras, right, you have the pinhole that's directly in front of the plane of film, right? In an anamorph, you have it sort of in a circular shape, and then the light needs to stretch, and that's why you get that interesting perspective in anamorph.
I thought it was just from a really tight radius, you know, that it just would warp it around.
But it is, isn't it? You've got that film going round the can, so are you mm-hmm. getting the film all the way around so it joins up, so you've got like a complete circular piece of film in there?
Uh-huh.
And then I tell you what, I think Diane Peterson does this as well, because she does some really stretchy images, and that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I've been looking at her stuff, I'm sure most of her images are done with sort of anamorphic.
We're going to have to grill her on it then, because she's coming on next.
Yeah. She might have some cool like coffee cans or something that she sort of does the same thing in, because she always makes sort of interesting single-use cameras, right? But yeah, that's the general principle, is that the light has to stretch. And it's going to morph the image itself just by nature of where the film plane, you know, and the light hit. So that's kind of what makes the animal.
Well, I've learned something today that's brilliant, and I've just done a little drawing, and I think I'm certainly going to have, because I thought they were great, and I'm going to have a play with that. And
have you seen
Jaina's images on her website, the anamorphic stuff? Corey?
I don't think I have.
There's one here I'm looking at, which is the end of a building, Jaina, with a face and a big nose and a street.
Oh.
And all the telegraph poles are leaning over, and this nose is kind of... And so did you just... You presumably then just pointed your can, the pinhole, at this image, and that's what...
Right.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, well, so what happened was that the cans were my first attempt at understanding it. I got a successful image out of it. And then I decided I wanted to buy, again, because I love my sort of dedicated cameras, I wanted to go into looking for a dedicated anamorphic pinhole camera.
Right.
My friend Hank Espresso Buzz, you should also see about getting him on the show.
Okay.
He's been a touchstone of knowledge for me. Through this whole journey of film, because he just has every kind of film camera in his arsenal. And if I'll ask him, hey, have you ever shot this film? He'll have had experience with it. He's kind of my walking Flickr database.
That's cool.
Is Hank active on Twitter, Flickr?
Yeah.
He's everywhere, I think.
You'll see him on both. Yeah, he's Espresso Buzz.
Espresso Buzz, yep.
Yeah, he's been a big influence on all of my film photography as well. When we started doing local pinhole meetups here for Pinhole Day, he and I, along with Jeff Soderquist, we were the three of us. And then from three, of course, we've now gone internationally, and you've seen what the turnout of, 35 people in Norwich
was. It was amazing, yeah.
So, yeah.
I think if you guys were meeting up on the Pacific West Coast, and I know you have before, I think I may have even persuaded persuading Julie to come out again next year, but we went to Boston a few years ago, so I think we probably won't be able to make it. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, if you make it out this way, just let all of us know, and you'll draw all the weirdos out from the
world. I know. Yeah. So is there a dedicated anamorphic camera that you can go and buy?
Absolutely.
Then is it?
Yeah, so Hank Espresso Buzz had been playing around with a cardboard, I think it was, or maybe it was a pressed cork board. There's a group called Stenopeka, Stenopeka with a K-A, that was making a dedicated pinhole camera. So he was shooting with that for a bit. I tried playing with that for a bit. But then I found Vermeer. And Vermeer was on Etsy, and it's this great guy. Oh, I forget where he actually
I think he's
lives.
From Poland.
Is he from Poland?
I might be wrong about that, but I recognize that brand, and I think he is from somewhere in Europe, I think.
Yeah. He makes these beautiful little pinhole cameras. He does just your standard, your 6x6, your 6x5, all of those. But he also made a pinhole camera that was anamorphic. So it was a dedicated pinhole anamorphic. So I picked it up from him and I loved it.
Cool.
So that's what I've been shooting with. It's got, the whole cylinder built into the camera, and it's a square box. And then how I learned to start to position, because you don't want the lens is not going to directly face the subject you want to capture in your pinhole. Because again, the light needs to come from this in a different way. So what I've learned is that you need to tilt the lens up and away from your subject, but somehow the light will still capture it onto your film. Again, I'm going to defer to engineers.
Sure. So is that like a 45 degree angle? Is that the sort of angle or does it not matter?
I would almost say like 45 degrees or even more. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean,
would this fall
the most unnatural form of pinhole photography ever.
No, that I'm really intrigued. Cool. There aren't many areas of analog photography that I don't have a passing knowledge of, but this is just, quite frankly, blown my mind seeing these pictures, and I had no idea.
Would this fall into Alex Shake's category of gimmicks?
No.
Gimmicky photography?
No. This isn't gimmicks. That's just infrared film.
Yeah, that's right.
In fact, I tell you what, the infrared film.
Damn, multiple exposures.
Infrared film in this camera would look great. So these pictures on your website, are they all taken with the Vermeer
camera? Those are all taken with the Vermeer camera. I think on Flickr I had posted my initial result from the soda cans. Yeah. But the ones on the website are all from the Vermeer. So those are all really great. A couple of things I would say about Anamorph is the exposure time tends to be longer than you expect, simply because the light needs to reach distance.
Does he give you some helpful hints onto how to calculate that when you buy his camera?
I bet you that camera's in pinhole assist. I bet you there's a
I wonder if there is
a plug-in for it. I bet you there is.
I had a lot better results shooting Neopan, simply because there is that threshold.
But you have some color. Color shots are okay.
The color shots are okay, but it did take a little bit of work to even out the exposure difference. Okay. Because the further the film is from the source of light, the longer it needs to reach that plane, right? That longer it needs to expose it.
It's got to travel farther.
Yep. So I had a couple of rows and I was getting really frustrated with shooting some Ektar or Portra or whatever C41 I was shooting at the time, because I was just getting bands of black along the top. The bottom of the film looked fine. The top of the film would have this weird black cloud on it.
Huh.
So it took a lot of trial and error to sort of figure out how to properly expose all sides of the film. So I learned to sort of overexpose and rely. And that's, again, why the Neopan works so well, was even if I overexpose certain pieces of the film, an image would still come up. But it does take a little bit to sort of even out the exposure across the film.
I think so. Cool. Black and white, I think obviously HP5, I think will work well because that's just fairly flexible. Mm-hmm. And I think, funnily enough, leading you onto a slightly different area, Delta 3200 would probably work pretty well in that, because I was shooting Delta 3200 in my 6x12 reality camera.
I think I've decided at this point I'm just not a 35mm shooter.
No,
I'm not either.
No,
I'm not either. 120.
No, I was shooting 120. 3200. Yeah. And actually, I'm a great fan of Delta 3200, and I've shot HP5 at 1600 and got beautiful. I'm amazed at how well that works. And when I shoot Delta 3200, I normally rate that at 1600 as well. And sometimes I think to myself, well, why don't I just buy HP5 and rated it?
What's your developer that you use?
I'm using DDX 1+4. For funnily enough, the times I use are for the times given for exposing it at 3200. Now, I did that because I read somewhere I think on AG Photographic's website, where I buy film from, they said, we've had loads of feedback from people who rate this film at 1600, because that's closer to what its true speed is, which is probably about 1200. And then develop it, so you're giving it plenty of exposure, but actually developing it then for the times given for 3200 gives a just a beautiful negative. And I've made some wonderful prints. And so I just always shoot it at 1600, and I keep some DDX in the darkroom.
Yeah.
Just
because the DDX, if I recall, that's their sort of high speed developer, right?
Yeah, you can use that for if you're pushing things. HP5, I've used it for that. But I've got great results with HP5 at 1600, just using ID11, which is my stock sort of developer, really.
Okay. And also, I just developed a roll of it yesterday morning, and I used Xtol at 1:1, and mine came out
great. It will, because Xtol is a fine grain solvent developer like D76 and ID11.
Yeah.
And there's no reason why it won't work, particularly if you're diluting it 1:1.
I mixed mine with unicorn tears too, and it just came
did
out.
You not mix it with well the secret ingredient will be atmospheric
with unicorn tears.
Atmospheric water.
I don't want to give you the answer to that. It's a secret.
Atmospheric water from the darkroom is what you need.
That's right. Yep, that's right. So, well, we are at the edge of our time limit, I think. So.
Yeah.
Andrew, I know you have something else to say, but is there anything else you want to say, Andrew?
No, I just love the variety of folks we're having on to the podcast. And,
yeah, I do too. It's great.
You know, and it's lovely catching up with you again, Jaina. And we'll, you know, you can come back on again anytime. We'll have you back on.
Yeah.
Probably the longest conversation we've had yet.
I think so, yeah. I'd love you to post some more of your anamorphic shots onto our Facebook group.
Yeah.
Please
do. With any sort of hints and tips for me, because I'm going to go and look for one of these cameras.
Step one is get a camera, Andrew.
Yeah. I know.
So another camera for Andrew to purchase. Maybe another one that you can find. Yeah, I've got an article I think I wrote actually for Alex Yates, because he was asking for content at a time.
Oh, for his Pinholista website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it on there?
Yeah. Actually, okay, I just found a link for it. So yeah, I'll go ahead and I'll add that into the Facebook group.
That would be good.
Send me the link so I can put it in the show notes.
It doesn't work. I think Alex just changed his website, so the link is dead.
Alex,
I'll find it.
Alex.
There was a few links I tried to follow on your website that just didn't work either, just to while you're talking about failed links.
Touché. Okay, I found the link. I will update the link accordingly. Perfect.
So we
on Facebook.
We always like to let our guests let everybody know where they can track them down at and judge them, judge their photography. So if you want to let everybody know, Jaina, where to find you at.
Sure. I'd say I'm the most active on my Instagram. So it's Jaina_Obscura. I do also have a Twitter, also Jaina_Obscura. But again, Instagram's really going to be the best place to connect and DM with me. And I don't know, just, you know, send me your cool camera shots. And then I have a website, Jaina-Obscura, because weirdly Jaina_Obscura as a domain was taken.
Was it?
At least at the time. Yeah, it was weird. I'm not sure who he's using.
I've just gone onto your blog, and there is a blog there from 2013 all about the Vermeer anamorphic pinhole camera, and there's a few links on there probably to the website. And Pinholista's on there. So this was before you went on your Pinhole Photography Day 2014 in Amsterdam, and you were using it back then.
Yeah, I was.
Send that to me, Andrew, so I can put it in the show.
Well, if you just go onto her website, onto Jaina's website, and go onto the blog, go onto the blog. And there's a you can do that, can't you?
I don't know.
We need to feed you as well.
Yeah.
I'm mad with you. I've got a hot date to go on. Look, I can't be talking to you guys any longer.
Look, I don't care about your hot date. We have to go soon, brother.
Are you don't going wear... in your white t-shirt, Andrew?
I was going to say, don't wear that white button-up frilly collar.
No, that,
you look like a swashbuckling sailor or something, Andrew.
This white shirt is going to walk by itself to the wash basket when I take it off. So.
Remember that white shirt that he was wearing in Seinfeld, you know, with the sleeves, the puffy shirt? That's the shirt he was wearing.
That would look excellent for your date there, Andrew.
Andrew, where can we find you at, buddy?
You can find me on most platforms at Warboys Snapper, WARBOYS Snapper. And for pinholes in particular, Instagram, Warboys Snapper _pinholes, which I need to post a few more images. And you can find me supporting the Twitter feed for our podcast. So that's at The Lensless. So if you get any rude comments back at you, that's me and not Corey.
I have nothing to do with Twitter, so
we can be nasty and take the mickey out of Corey, and he has no idea.
That's fine, let it rip.
And Corey, you're Mr. Pinhole Cannon.
That's me on Instagram. That's the best place to find me is on Instagram at Pinhole Cannon. And I'm taking care of the Lensless Podcast Instagram page. So I'm there too, and that's about it, isn't it? Facebook,
yeah, it is.
Flickr, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if folks out there, you know, we've got a guest list. I was talking to Corey yesterday about our guest list. It's pretty long still, but we're constantly reaching out to the pinhole community to invite folk on. So if you've got a burning desire and you can, you know, you've just heard Jaina talk for an hour. So if you can come on and have a conversation with us about pinhole and be enthusiastic,
yeah,
then drop us a line. You can send us an email, can't you, Corey, at thelenslesspodcast,
yep.
thelenslesspodcast@ yahoo.com.
.com, yep.
You can download the Anchor app and send us a rude voice message. We like those.
Oh, we have one of those. We'll have to do it next show. I totally forgot about it. I just remembered. Yep. It came in last week and you weren't here, and I said I'm going to wait and do it this week.
Okay, yeah.
So we'll do it next week.
I normally phone up, do a voice message to the negative positives and give them some grief.
Yeah.
It's good fun.
You're calling everybody.
I am. Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, Jaina, thanks so much for coming. We appreciate it. It's nice to talk to you and get a little insight. It's always fun.
Yeah. No, thanks for having me, guys.
And we didn't even talk about pugs, did we?
No, there
we
did.
We didn't even hear the guest appearance. Can you give him the bark?
Oh no, he's been snoozing for the last hour. He's unlikely to get up for another
just
eight.
Poke him with a stick and see if he makes a noise. Go on.
He just looks at you and he's like, "You better stop it."
They're really great. They're like a old retired men that just sort of sit around.
Yeah, I've got my.
It's kind of like Andrew.
Well, I'm working on it. Today and yesterday. I said to Julie, this must be what it's like to be retired. I'm working on it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Awesome. And everybody, thanks for listening. We hope everybody has a great week. And we will talk to you guys next week.
Shoot pinholes. Be nice.
Yep. Have a great week.
Yeah. Thanks, Jaina. Bye now, everybody. Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
All right. Bye.